when usually when you play a game and then something bad happens, you just look at immediately what was the last like incorrect thing that happened. But usually it's like a snowball effect. It's like, because I missed this thing, now like 30 seconds later, this guy has the opportunity to get.
You're listening to the Humans at Game podcast. I'm your host, Q. This week we had Jordan, who's a co-owner of the Tier 1 Gaming Lounge in Milwaukee. And it's kind of crazy how I met him. So my company, we were hired to speak at this program with this group of students, and I met him through there. And then also we had our most recent event a few weeks back, and he was there. And it was about how to monetize like your personal brand. And we were talking about all these things, and I mentioned video games in this podcast, and him and his friend came up to me afterwards, and they're like, "Hey, I had no idea that you were into video games like that. I didn't know you were a gamer." And we started talking, and I had no idea that something like this existed in Milwaukee. I had no idea that he was working on this or that he was even involved with this. And it was really cool to hear from him, like what it took to get this off the ground. He was also a near professional player in Dota 2. I mean, it's done a lot of work with people in that space, and just really cool to dive into that and what it took to go from, "Hey, like I suck at this game," to I'm competitive now. I'm doing some damage now. Like I'm top 100 in the world. It's just really, really cool to hear his story. This is a shorter episode, so I'm not going to waste 5 minutes just ranting and talking about my life, talking about my story and what's going on. But as always, I appreciate all the reviews, all the ratings that you guys are leaving me on iTunes, all the listens that are happening across platforms as well. But I appreciate you, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Jordan, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the Humans at Game podcast. I am freaking geeked, dude, to talk about you, talk about Tier 1 Lounge. How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, Q.
That was not that convincing, man. How you doing?
I don't know. Like, everything is going good. I just talked with the people, you know, Avalon Theater.
Yeah.
I just talked with them, and they want to like have us run a Smash tournament for them. So Ooh. It looks really cool. Like
in the theater?
At Rosebud Theater, actually. So like they own a few of them. Rosebud, like they got couches there. I just talked with them, and I don't know. I have like the logistics running through my head right now. So I was kind of, yeah.
No, it's dope, man. I used to be really big into Smash. It wasn't that good, but really good game. But for those that don't follow you, haven't heard of you, can you just give a little bit of an intro and then tell me a little bit about Tier 1?
Alright, hold on. This guy's asking me if I'm making a beat. No, I'm actually on a call. Oh. Yeah, sorry.
You're good.
Okay. I lost my train of thought. So for me, okay. So I'm owner of Tier 1. We've been up for like over 3 years. We opened July 15th, 2016. And before that, I was like a competitive Dota 2 player. I had two accounts, ranked top 100, and I played on like semi-pro teams. And yeah, since my stint in competitive, I worked a little bit and decided like I want to create something for gamers in Milwaukee. I'm from Milwaukee. Mm. And then we created Tier 1 Gaming Lounge. We started planning like in 2015, and then we opened our doors like mid 2016. Yeah.
No, that's dope, man. Tell me about Tier 1. Like, what is it specifically?
Yeah, so I would describe it as a modern gaming arcade. So, like, the old gaming arcade would be where you go to a coin-op machine. Like, you have your old Pac-Man or Street Fighter, and you put some quarters in. So, that's old gaming. Old arcade. New gaming is now you play, like, Fortnite or, like, on Xbox or on PCs. So, what we do is we have, like, a venue with a bunch of computers, Xboxes. We provide all the hardware, like the computers, the keyboards, mice, headsets, and then you play by the hour. So like you put in $5, you can play for a whole hour. Put in $12, play for 3 hours, something like that.
It's legit, man. What's the membership like there? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, we don't actually have membership, but you create an account when you come in. So like you have a username. And then when you add time to it, so our biggest bundle is you can get 6 hours for $20. And then the time never expires. So like if you play for 1 hour a day, then you can play for like 6 days for $20, you know?
Yeah.
We're thinking about doing a monthly membership. I'm still running the numbers, but it'd be something like $10 a month. And then you can get hours for only $2 an hour to like make it cheaper and more accessible. Yeah.
No, that's legit, dude. I might have to get a membership. Tell me what it was like getting that off the ground. Like what actually went into that? Cause I know it couldn't have been easy.
Yeah. So, a lot of it went into the business planning to begin with. So like, is this possible? I used to work in Chicago and they have Ignite Gaming Lounge there. Ignite, if you don't know, is like a really big and successful one. They have two locations in the Chicago area. And then while I was working there, I'd spend my nights there. And I was like, man, this is really cool. And after I stopped working, I was like, I want to create something like Ignite in Milwaukee. So I just spent my days there like trying to make a business plan. Like I counted how many customers they have, about how long they play, about how much like revenue they make a week, how many staff they have, like how they set stuff up. And then I drafted my own business plan for a Milwaukee scale one. So like not as big as Chicago and like what we would need. And I found it was like feasible, like it'd be profitable. And then I went around asking friends and family first for investment.
Yeah.
I had some amount of money saved, but I needed like a lot more. So I talked with like my old college friends, like they got new jobs and stuff. They've been working. And one of them, he was saving to go to graduate school, actually. So after his undergrad, he worked in biochemistry in a lab there.
Yeah.
He made pretty decent amount of money, but he was just straight saving for grad school. He was an international student also. So like he can't get loans for grad school. And then what happened was he actually got a full ride to a PhD program, like a fellowship. So then all his money he saved, he was like, I'm willing to invest in your idea if you really want to execute. And like he could tell like I really plan to execute. Like I had the whole business plan ready. And then he's like the main investor to get it started. And then I also partnered with Pat Nguyen. So Pat and his family in Vietnam owned land centers, or they call them like internet cafes there. And he was supposed to be like the tech background person and he'd know how to run the operations and he was also willing to invest. And then the three of us together were able to like put enough to execute the plan.
It's amazing, dude. What was like the, if you don't mind me asking, what was the number? Like what, like how much did you have to raise in order to get it off the ground?
Yeah, so it was.
And where did that money go?
Yep. So it was $150,000. Okay. That's like the business plan number that would have like some room for operation costs. Being like new to entrepreneurship, we kind of cheapened out. We had like a little over $100,000. We're like, we'll just not pay ourselves and do whatever to get by. So like what ended up happening is we cut corners by doing a lot of build out ourselves, like painting the place, like tiling the floor. Like I literally got on my knees and tiled the floor of this place.
Legit, dude.
Building the tables and stuff. We just manually did a lot of the work to bring down the cost a lot. And like building these chairs, we went to like Alibaba, got like some bulk deal from China, anything we could do to save money. In the first 6 months, I don't even think we got paid at all. I made like, oh shoot. Am I on here still? Oh yeah. My window's cut off for a second. Sorry.
I'm sorry you cut out on me on that last sentence. What'd you say?
Yeah, my window's cut out. Yeah. 6 months, we like barely got paid. Maybe in the beginning we didn't get paid at all. And then we went up to like $3 an hour or something like that. Just so like we could save enough money to like operate.
Yeah.
And then over time, like the business slowly grew in revenue where it was enough where we could like pay employees. And that's like how the finances worked.
Oh, that's amazing, man. Where does like the bulk of your revenue come from?
Just the bulk of the revenue is just people who come in and pay for hours to play. So it's mostly on the weekends. There's probably two different types of customers that come to Tier 1. One are like the younger kids, so like, I don't know, 12 to 17, say, who come on the weekend after school. And they just play like 6 hours or something like that. And then The other bit is the older crowd, like people who have jobs already and who after work, they don't really have a place to go and they don't want to go home. So then they're probably like early to mid 20s and they have jobs. So they have disposable income and they come here and play some games. Yeah.
It's amazing, man. I love that you're making it more accessible. You said that you were like into Dota 2, like top 100, two accounts that were over top 100. What did you like? Walk me through like what you were doing before you started all this.
Yeah, so this brings me back a while ago when I was like freshman year of college. This probably rings true for a lot of people. I was like studying for chemistry major and I was like, oh, I'm going to do all these great things. Cure cancer. Get a PhD, you know, that type of thing. And then after you work, change the world, yeah. And then after you work in the lab, you're like, I'm just going to be a cog in the machine. And then you kind of like rebel, like you don't want to finish the major, you want to look for different things. And I couldn't really find something, but I really liked Dota 2. Dota 2 got, I think it was released around 2011, like the beta, and I was invited into it, maybe 2012, something like that. And I'm like, man, I played League at the time. I was like, holy shoot, this is like League, but a million times more depth. Nothing against League, but it was just a very interesting game. And like as someone who played League and played fighting games, there's so much like stuff to it to like learn and to get better at. And I had Dota 2 is interesting because it comes from Warcraft 3 mod, like Dota All-Stars. So there's people who've already been playing that game for like 6-7 years before Dota 2 even came out. So like one of my roommates, he was one of them. So he from a Warcraft 3 Dota player, he kind of taught me how to play the game as he learned Dota 2 as well. And that's how I kind of got introduced. And then I wasn't really sure if I was going to continue college or something. So I'm like, all right, if I don't know what I'm going to do, I'm just going to do what I like to do. So then I was like, I'm going to become pro in Dota 2. That was the plan. I think I watched TI1. Like the international one, it was like a $1 million tournament, which is insane at the time for esports. Like, there's nothing like it, I think, at the time. Like, 2011, a $1 million prize pool. There's nothing like that. There was like Evo and fighting game tournaments at the time, but they would just be like 10K or something. And that thing is $1 million. $1 million, you can do a lot more. You know, it's like 100 times bigger. It's like you can try to do that as your job. So, I was terrible at the game. I was completely new to it, so I just started playing, and then after like 6 months or so, I was like, "All right, I'm just gonna commit, and I'm gonna become the best." And then I was like kind of shitty ranked, the equivalent of like Golden League or like 3K scrub in Dota, and then I'm gonna become the best. So I looked at like the challenger leaderboards, and then every day when I played, I'd be like, "What can I do to get better?" Like, I'd review my replays, and it took me, like, 6 months, and then I was top, I think I went to top 80. That was my highest. Yeah. So the thing was to climb my solo skill first and then look for teams. And then after that, I started looking for teams. And then, like, to do it, it was kind of, I just go on Reddit and search, like, Dota 2 comp, and then you just join some random team. And then I joined a random team. They had like some other high rank players or whatever. But what's missing in a lot of NA Dota and even like gaming in general is leadership skills and like teamwork and stuff. So you learn how to get really good at a game, but you never really learn leadership skills or like teamwork skills or like how to mesh people together. So like that first team, we had a lot of really good players, but we had awful like teamwork. Like everyone was just pretty much solo queue, like 5 solo queue players in a team. But you meet some people out of there and then you take them and be like, hey, let's leave this team, but we work well together and then let's try to make a new team. And then that's when me and Scapegoat, that was like my, I think he was like the mid or carry and I was like the other mid or carry and we just switch off. We made a new team and then we got more players and then we kind of kept rotating. And if you don't know Scapegoat, he's Nate Hill, now known as Nate Hill, and plays Fortnite, and he's like really big time. And it's crazy how like some of the players, they keep playing esports or keep playing competitive games, and like their mentality is what drives them to become good at any game they want to be. Yeah. Yeah.
How often were you playing? Like when you went from, okay, I suck at this game to 80?
I was playing every day. I think I really started after my freshman year. I took a break, and then like there's one summer I just played the whole year, or a whole summer break, and then I played like 10 hours, 12 hours, maybe about 12 hours a day. And then it didn't take that long though. Like if you actually try to get better, like when I played, I didn't really care what happened in the game. I just cared about like how many mistakes I made, like what were things I could have done better. And then if you play like that, if you play to get better and not like actually play the game, then that's when you really improve. Yeah.
No, that's so interesting, man. I'm fascinated by that. Like, hey, like how many, so I was an athlete as well. Like I was a collegiate triple jumper and I played basketball in like high school and stuff like that. It's like very, like there's so many parallels with esports and just traditional sports. And I might just run an experiment like on Apex or something. Like, yo, like let's take 6 months or a year and let's see how good I can actually get if I'm intentional about it. And how much is actually skill and how much is just time and grind. What would you say are like some things that you were, what are those things that you were paying attention to? Like, what were those mistakes? Like, teamwork? Like, how did you actually measure those things? And what were those things?
Yeah, so there's a lot to this question. So for mistakes, so for mistakes and stuff, like, when you play a game and then something bad happens, you just look at immediately what was the last, like, incorrect thing that happened. But usually it's like a snowball effect. It's like, because I missed this thing, now, like, 30 seconds later, this guy has this opportunity, or because like I hesitated here, now like I'm gonna be 2 seconds late to this engagement now, and then now I won't have an opportunity to play this fight, which because I couldn't play the fight, I put my whole team behind. So you kind of look at a very macro level, like your actions, how do they influence your later actions, and how does it influence your team as a whole? Because like if you go to, it kind of gets too much in depth, but if you go to a spot, it kind of like changes the value if your team goes to that spot, because if you're already there, now your teammate doesn't want to go there. Like so you the way everything you do influences all the decision trees of everyone else in the game. I used to play chess also. Like every time it's your turn, you have like 10 moves, and each move will influence all the moves that your opponent can make. Right? It's kind of the same thing in a mobile game, except every move you make influences your four teammates and influences the five enemies. And then like there's a little bit of double blind and guessing. So like if you're in his shoes, what were all the moves he could make? And like given the information he knows, what move will he probably make? What's the better move against that kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I just totally lost my train of thought, but yeah. I would ask you this and then I'll find it. Oh, no. Like how many, like were you, like after you played, were you just like reviewing the games like immediately, like the gameplay immediately? Or is it like at the end of the day, you're going to watch all of them?
Yeah. So Dota 2. They have a really nice replay system. So while you're queuing for a game, you can watch a replay. And then sometimes for some key ones, so like if I know something went really wrong, then I'll just review like the whole like 10-minute span of that part of the game and be like, how did this happen? And then what would I do differently? And also a lot of it was like going into the training mode and just like being efficient. So I watch a replay and I'd see like RTZ or Sumail and they're RTZ or Eternal Envy, like pros in Dota 2, and I watched their like farming pattern, and then I watched like from here to here, they're able to, from this minute, they're able to farm this many camps and get this much gold. But if I played it, I'd only get this much gold. How do I learn how to do it? Like some of it's PvE, like it's just going to a lab and they call labbing it out in fighting games. Just practice. Yeah. So it's a mix of the two, but like sometimes I think the practice in a lab is more beneficial than playing games. Yeah.
That's so interesting, man. Like for like tier one, do you think you'll ever get into like just training or possibly owning like an amateur team or anything like that?
Yeah, I definitely thought of it. For pro gaming like this, it's really hard because like pro gaming is like on an international scale or like at least a national scale. Yeah. You know, sometimes like the 2K League or something like that, they make it so only people in like USA can participate, but usually international. So you have to be the best in that whole area. Where tier one's a single location. So like in tier one's interest, we want to get people from Milwaukee, right? But to be competitive in an international like ecosystem, you want to get people from everywhere because everyone else is getting talent from everywhere. If you only get talent from Milwaukee, you're going to lose, right? And then if you restrict yourself to Milwaukee, you can still, yeah, get international people and then like fly them here or something. But then like it logistically, what does Milwaukee have that like someone on West Coast or East Coast, they don't have? I mean, it's kind of centered, kind of like Chicago maybe, and like lower operational costs a little bit. Yeah. But those are the questions you have to run. And I thought of making like helping collegiate teams, because like collegiate teams, you're limited to that area for that college, and maybe that works. But like for international, like I'm becoming the best Dota 2 team, it's a little hard for a small town like Milwaukee.
No, dude, I love that. I'm excited to see what you do. I really am. I'm overly fascinated by the fact that you created your own job. I know you do other stuff too, but you created your own job in like the gaming space, dude. And like that's a lot of people's dreams. Like, what would you say to, let's say maybe they want to be a professional gamer or they just want to be in the space, like what would you say are some actionable things that they can do to maybe get more involved?
So I think I made my own job in that like I could just work here and have like a decent lifestyle. Yeah. But it's like the stuff I did to get here, like I tried to become a pro gamer, right? It didn't really help me open the LAN center, except it gave me like that analytical mindset and that like that determination. I think a lot of times when you do stuff, you don't think of like the soft skills you get, or like the, I don't know, like that mentality you get when you do stuff. So like even though gaming itself does not teach you like how to code or how to use a computer, or may a little bit, but like not really, you don't really learn that type of that depth, but it teaches you to like have patience and like grit when they're going through things. I mean, it's depending on how good you want to be. Some people play games and just play it, right? And then you won't learn much, whatever. But I think for, if you want to be good at anything or be competitive at things, like competitive gaming, if you really try to get into it, it's like a competition. And a business is also like a competition. So if you think of the ways like you try to beat other people or try to make like yourself the best, a lot of stuff transfers from business or competition, or like even like Twitch streaming or something. Like, how do I market this? How do I make this better? You know, like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that answer, man. And lastly, like, are you still playing? Like, is it just mostly Dota 2, or you just not have time? Like, what games are you playing?
Dude, I sold out, man. Like, the truth. like I used to do like Dota 2 only, man. But like in North America, Dota 2 is not a popular game. That's the truth of it. So like all my friends, they fucking play League of Legends, so I had to play League of Legends. yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah, so I just end up playing League. It's just like baby Dota. It's a little different sometimes. Like some parts are interesting. It's like, because the game is so structured, there's less like random stuff that happens in Dota. Like the game sometimes gets like really crazy, and it's like, I don't know what the hell's going on, and no one really knows what's going on, but you just try to like pick a strategy as a team and be like, all right, let's try to execute the strategy. In League, it's very structured. It's like, you're supposed to do either this or this. Those are like your two options, and then you do them too. And every time like the meta, someone invents something new, Riot's like, all right, this game's not supposed to do that. You're only supposed to do these two things. And they nerf it so that it's only able to be played one way. So they make it more like a fighting game where like it's structured and you run into situations where there's only a few options. And then it's like they call it Yomi, or like a mind game about which option to choose. Mm-hmm. And then there's some outplaying, like split second reactions and stuff. But I think you get split second reactions in every game, like a shooting game. Dota 2 has it, League of Legends have it. Every game has split second reactions. I don't think that's unique to League at all. But yeah, they make it so it's like there's a few options and you get to choose from the few. It makes it easy to watch too.
Yeah, bro, I suck. I'm trash at League. Like, I played for like a year. I'm absolute trash. Most mobiles, like, I'm trash.
Dude, that game is not easy to learn too. People say it's simple, but I don't know. The game has a lot of small stuff to it.
Yeah, agreed, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on, dude. Like, seriously, I'm going to have to stop by soon.